Music Matters here on Whiskey FM.
Alterbridge, welcome back to Glasgow again. It's not that long since you were last here.
Thank you so much for having us back. I think we were probably here back in 2016 or possibly 17. I know that we did a Glasgow show at the release of The Last Hero, the last Alterbridge record, and came back over right after the Royal Albert Hall show that we did, or the shows that we did in London, but I think it was Edinburgh.
It was Edinburgh.
It was the city that we were in last time. So it's always great to be back here. We love this venue, and I'm certainly looking forward to the show.
It's nice to hear you pronouncing Edinburgh correctly.
I had a teacher in middle school who was from Edinburgh, so I learned how to say it even with a bit of a brogue as well. So
a lot of people from your home country is Edinburgh.
Right.
I can't say it the way they say it, but they don't say it right. Scotland's one of the first countries to take Alter Bridge to heart. Yes. back in the day, around about the time of that first album.
Absolutely.
How well do you remember that?
Actually, pretty well. I think it was the Garage is where we played, if I remember correctly. There's a couple different venues that we've played here before we were fortunate enough to move up into the Hydro here. But yes, I can remember pretty vividly. We always had the Logan Boys, who were a local band that always made this journey with us, and Glasgow is their hometown, I believe, so we would always see them on a very regular basis, and a lot of their friends would come out to the shows and stuff like that. So it's always been a great home for us, and we are certainly fortunate and love the fact that we get to come back here at least once or twice an album cycle.
I praised you on your pronunciation of Edinburgh, but you failed the test on the Garage.
Oh, my bad. See, like I said, I had the teacher. She you know, told us how to say Edinburgh, but I never got the Garage part. So
that's close.
Yeah, it's closer. We call it Garage in back in the States.
Now, this new album is just out, what, a couple of months now?
Yes.
And how well has it been going down live? Presumably you're playing a few tracks from it live.
We are. We've got, I guess there's about 7 songs that we're sort of rotating through. Wouldn't You Rather has been in the set since day one, since that was the first single that we released off the album. And the song Pay No Mind has been a regular in the set pretty much since we first started touring on this record. And then we've got a couple other ones that we sort of rotate through. Depending on which night, we try to sort of keep it interesting for the fans, at least to have a couple of audibles per night where we can rotate through songs, so people that are coming to multiple shows don't feel like they're just watching the same show the whole time. Godspeed is a song that we started doing here on this European run, and it's been in the set every night since we started. But the reception's been great. You know, you can certainly tell people are watching and listening, and you know, they're not quite as active and dancing around and jumping and stuff because they want to watch the performance. Mm-hmm. But the reception for all the songs have been very strong, and we've gotten a lot of great feedback.
Do you find that when you write and record a new album and you go out and tour, that when you're in the recording studio, you think, now that's going to be a great live song, that's going to go down live, and then when you start playing it on tour, it doesn't quite work? Does that ever happen?
It certainly does, and vice versa. There's some songs that you just think, oh, this will be an album track, and then once you finally hear it recorded and all the parts added to it and then perform it, it might react a lot better than you thought it would have. You never know. I mean, you can have a gut feeling with any song and any album, but until you actually play it for and in front of the fans, you never quite know what you're going to get.
Interesting. I was talking to the Shinedown Boys earlier, and we were talking about the meet and greet thing, the fact that this is, well, 20 years ago, if a band was signing an autograph and maybe getting their picture taken with the band at the stage door.
Right.
It was, you know, there was no question about money changing hands.
Right.
But of course, the business has changed so much now.
Very much so.
And you know, an album like Walk the Sky would maybe have sold 5 million copies 10, 20 years ago. But now maybe you sell 1 million copies, so you've got to make a living by selling T-shirts, by doing gigs,
absolutely,
and meet and greet.
Absolutely, yeah. The industry has certainly changed, and the way the artists make money. And we are fortunate enough that our tours are well attended, especially over here. Bands have been doing merchandise forever, so that's always been a part of it. But album sales and the way you get paid from albums is completely different now. And obviously everybody with, if it's iTunes or Spotify or Pandora or whatever outlet you get your music from, very little of that ever makes its way to the artist itself. So we've all had to get sort of creative in finding different ways and different avenues to, you know, maximize profit, but at the same time still give fans something that they can enjoy. And that would be, you know, for us, and each band does it differently, but we have everybody come in and gets to watch us do sound check, you know, run through songs, practice songs, whatever, and then afterwards there's sort of a meet and greet photo opportunity and a chance to say hey real quick. And then, you know, those fans are the first that are allowed to hit the merch booth, so they can get whatever they want before anybody else can. If somebody needs an extra small or double XL, and you know, they get sold out during the show, and then also have early access back into the venue, so they can be the right on the front row if they choose to be.
Another thing that's changed over a longer period of time, and I've lived through it, and I wonder how you'd have managed back in the 60s and the 70s, mm-hmm. the Beatles and the Stones and Zeppelin and mm-hmm. Purple, etc., and Sabbath, mm-hmm. recording an album in a week or 2 weeks, mm-hmm. and quite often bringing out an album twice a year, if not,
yeah.
one, certainly maximum was once a year.
Yeah.
Alter Bridge and your contemporaries, mm-hmm. it tends to be a 2 to 3 year cycle.
It is.
Do you think you could have managed it back in the day?
I think the whole process was probably a lot easier back then. Honestly, I you know, it was four guys in a room that recorded a song and they did it till they got it right, and then they moved on to the next song. And nowadays, there's a lot of layers to it. You know, the drums, at least the way that we've been doing it, is drums get recorded first, and then the bass, and then Mark's guitars, Miles' guitars, solos, vocals, overdubs. And it's, you know, with technology now, it's much easier to make an album, I think. But it also seems to take a little bit longer to do it, just the way the process is. We've done recording where it was, you know, the four of us in a room and just recording it. That was some of how Blackbird was tracked, the original, or the first one we started working with, Elvis Basquiat, who's been our producer now for the last five records. Some of it was more live, and then some of it was done in pieces. But yeah, it's, you know, and I guess sort of the way the industry works now is they don't want you to oversaturate the market with new material or new albums per se. I know that there's a lot of pop artists and some rock artists that are considering doing it, but it's basically going in and just recording a couple songs and then putting them out, touring to support that, and then, you know, a few months later doing the same thing, as opposed to making full-length albums, which is not something that I think we would be interested in doing, but it's certainly an interesting take on the music industry these days.
We're talking to Scott Phillips from Alter Bridge, and it's time for some music. So I think we'll play a track from Walk the Sky. We'll go in the deep. I wonder, okay. Scott, is that one that you're playing live?
It is one that we do play live on any given night. It's one of the three or four that we sort of rotate through. I won't say whether it's going to be played tonight or not, but it'll certainly come up within the next few shows for sure.
Okay, let's hear it. In the Deep from Walk the Sky from Alter Bridge.
so alive. Every rise, every fall brings me back to where I must go.
It's from the new Alter Bridge album. The album's titled Walk the Sky, and we're chatting with Scott Phillips from the band. Scott, the album sleeve, I think Alter Bridge album sleeves are always interesting. They always get that sort of sense of mystery. What's that about? And they've also, in my opinion, got that great, you can't put your finger on it, but you just think, I'd buy a t-shirt with that on it. It's just, it's really looking great. I think it's Dan Tremonti that's done it again.
Dan's, he's always been, as far as our albums go, and with this one specifically, the front cover, always an element of art, of some mystery to it. We've always wanted, you know, our album covers to sort of stand on their own as something that are interesting, as opposed to just being a support for the band, you know, name and the name of the album. So the imagery on this one I thought was really, really cool. We've seen a few tattoos already of people that had sort of rushed out when they saw it and decided that was something they wanted to commit permanently to their body. But I think each one is different, sort of alludes to the album title or whatever it is, but also has just sort of, you know, its own merit, can stand on its own.
When it comes to songwriting, the whole band's credited as songwriters. You're actually sitting in a studio and maybe Mark comes in with a riff and Miles comes in with a bit of lyric. How do you contribute?
Well, I think Mark and Miles are certainly the primary songwriters, and a lot of it is catalog. They'll write constantly on the road, at home, whatever it is. And going back to technology, it's so easy now to open GarageBand or Logic or Pro Tools or whatever software you use and record some ideas into there and be able to add layers to it later on. But I think they're just trying to get their, you know, their main riff and ideas down. And sometimes it's just a verse or just a chorus, and sometimes it's the verse and chorus. And a lot of it gets cataloged early, then we'll all come in, the four of us together. And the last couple times with Elvis, our producer, and basically sit down in a room and hash through ideas. And that's a time where everybody just sort of gets to put in their input of what they think. If this part feels right, or that, you know, this particular part feels like it's being forced in there and doesn't need to be there. It's just a time for the four of us to really kind of get the song structure down and find parts that all, you know, give us a feeling or emotion whenever it's played. And I think that's sort of the approval process, is once the four of us are all on the same page, like, yeah, this is really cool, that's what we'll move forward with.
In your opinion, mm-hmm. and only in your opinion, mm-hmm. who was the greatest drummer of all time?
Oh, boy. For me, it would have to be John Bonham. I think he's probably, of all the guys that I was influenced by when I first started playing, and then sort of looking back to see who they were influenced by, it was certainly, he was sort of the godfather to me of modern rock drumming. And there's a lot of great drummers from classic rock era. But he was the one, him as a player and the band that he was with, that I really gravitated towards. So my vote would be Bonham, but I could certainly hear arguments for others.
Do you enjoy a dram of whiskey, Scott?
I have been known to partake in some whiskey. I tend to be more of a vodka drinker by nature, but I've certainly had my fair share of whiskey. I really like old fashions, which is just sort of whiskey, a little bit of water, some bitters, some sugar, and then a zest of orange, if you will, or whatever. That's become my my gentlemanly drink of late, that I've really enjoyed.
Any particular whiskey?
Brian says Crown.
That I was haven't drank in 7 years.
Yeah, that was
good, man.
That was him back in the day for sure. He was the whiskey warlord, as we call him. But
too much.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we've all been guilty of it, but he decided it was time for him to get clean, I should say, or walk the straight and narrow, and he's been a fabulous human being for it. So. For whiskeys, a Bullet. I don't know if you guys
bourbon.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
It's a bourbon, but I've certainly enjoyed that. I do like Crown Royal. I know that there are some great Scottish whiskeys that I'm not overly familiar with, but have heard great things about.
Have you ever been on a distillery tour?
Not of any major brand. I've had a very small distillery that was in Hilton Head, South Carolina, which is a small sort of little resort community that my family and I would go up there every few years for a vacation week. And the last time that we were up there, they've got a Hilton Head distillery where they do, they have a rum, they have a, I believe they have a vodka, they've got a couple of other things. I'm not sure if they do a whiskey or not. I'd have to go back and look, but. We got to do a small tour of the distillery and then a tasting, and it was really interesting. I've always been interested in how that process actually works and the size of a building that you would need to do something like that. And they were certainly a small time manufacturer, but still had quite an impressive setup.
Can you remember the very first whiskey you tried?
Oh, I'm sure it was probably Jack Daniel's. That would
with Colt.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Or maybe just straight at that time, yeah.
It's become the rock and roll drink. Back in the 60s and 70s, it was very much a case of Scotch and Coke was mm-hmm. the, you know, the Stones and the type of,
sure.
you know, Scotch and Coke was the drink. But mm-hmm. Jack Daniel's seems to have taken over in that particular.
Yeah, yeah. It's such, for being from the States, it's such a major player there when it comes to whiskeys, you know. Before you can even drink whiskey, you know what Jack Daniel's is. So I'm sure that was probably the reason that was my first sample of whiskey.
You've played here in Glasgow at the Hydro a few times. You've played mm-hmm. other venues, as we mentioned, but mm-hmm. you've played the Hydro a few times.
Yeah.
How'd you rate it?
I think it's great. It's really, compared to some of the other arenas, which are all very nice, but they're more laid out for sporting events, which I'm sure that you can do here as well, but it's more of an oval shape. Where the Hydro is sort of almost more in the round, a much larger floor area where I think it's better sight lines for crowd goers that can see the show. The accommodations for us are extremely lovely, and the building itself looks really cool at night with all the LED lights going. So it's certainly one of my favorites. I've remembered this place from the first time we played here. Like, I always kind of think back to fond memories of playing here and being here.
The Royal Albert Hall's another venue that probably brings back good memories.
It certainly does. Yeah.
Recording there with the 52 piece orchestra.
Yes.
How difficult was that, adjusting your performance and listening to different sounds?
It was an amazing experience. Certainly nerve wracking. The prestigiousness of the venue itself alone was enough to raise your heart rate significantly. Playing with the orchestra, we all did a lot of homework ahead of time. We picked a set list that was not normal for us. We did a lot more of the epic songs that just felt like it. Having an orchestra added to them would really enhance those tunes. And so we picked a set list according to that. It was probably longer than we've ever played. It had to be close to about 2.5 hours worth of performance itself. We had a couple of days of rehearsal built in, and we were getting tracks from the orchestra. Basically, you know, they had written out what they were going to do, put it into a keyboard, and then played it back so we could kind of at least get a feel for what their parts were going to be. But actually sitting in a room and playing with them was completely different. And we all initially were saying, yeah, turn the orchestra up in our monitors. We really want to hear it. And then found ourselves missing complete sections of songs because we were so enamored with what they were doing that we forgot to do what we were supposed to do. So we finally had to adjust their levels back down to audible, but barely. Going through the way that they had written the parts and their arrangements of the songs versus our arrangements of the songs. So there was a couple of things that had to be worked out there. At the end of the day, we thought that we would probably get through the set 4 or 5 times within those 2 days worth of rehearsals before we got to do the show. It turns out we only got through it once, from making adjustments and sounds and arrangements and union breaks and all, you know, the typical things that go along with working with such a large group. We got through a couple of songs multiple times, but really the set from front to back just one time. So going in that first night, there were certainly a lot of nerves, but we were confident in ourselves and more than confident in Simon and the Parallax Orchestra to do what they do so well. And we got through it. You know, the first night was a lot of nerves, but a lot of fun. And then the second night, once we really knew what we were, you know, what we would expect, what the crowd would expect, it was like a big party. It was awesome.
Two quick questions to finish it. Mm-hmm. Scott, firstly, what's your sport?
For me, I'm an American football guy. I know every time I say American football, everybody over here says they don't even use their feet. Why would you call it football? I don't have an answer for that. But
there's an American football team here in Glasgow.
Is there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's building.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen that the NFL has had a few games over here this last year. I'm trying to sort of spread the sport and see if they can grow their fan base. But I'm more of a college football guy. I went to Florida State University in Tallahassee. My parents both went there, so I was sort of born and raised on that. So that's the team that I follow, and really all of their sports I follow. But for pro teams, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they're so close to Orlando. It's about an hour drive. So I've been following them for a while. But in general, I'll watch NFL games, NBA games. We recently got a Major League Soccer team in Orlando, the Orlando City Lions. And I have a friend that is one of the players on the team, so I've managed to get to a game or two and really taken an interest into it. It's been a lot of fun, and excited for when World Cups come around and that type of thing. And it certainly has gotten my interest in football, soccer, as we call it, raised significantly.
Scott Phillips, an absolute pleasure talking to you again today. We're going to play off another track from Walk the Sky. And this track, can you maybe tell us a little bit about the song before we listen to it? It's Take the Crown.
Take the Crown. Probably one of our favorite songs right out of the gate once the album was sort of coming together and we were listening to demos. That was one that I was really drawn to. Miles will tell you the story of what it's about better than I would be able to. But it's basically about, you know, just sort of standing up, you know, not worrying about people that are coming at you or trying to knock you down, but just hold your ground and, you know, strive for the best in general. He wrote it. It was based on a Little League experience he had as a youth playing baseball, and they were going up against the top team in their league or whatever it was, and how they all pulled together and, you know, managed to win that game and not be affected by their comebacks or any of that kind of stuff. So it's not quite as eloquent as I'm sure some people thought the song was about, but that's the basic story of it.
Let's hear it. State the Crown from Alter Bridge. Scott Phillips, thank you.
Thank you.
So sorry, so sorry, but you're good.